All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
And before we start this episode, I just want to say that today, just this morning, Bill Russell passed away at age 88. He was a legend in this game, you know, one of the most winning players in NBA history, 11 rings. And it's just it's a sad day to see him go. So rest in peace to Bill Russell. And yeah.
He definitely lived a full life.
No, so. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess from that, it would only be appropriate to talk about the Celtics next. So there have been reports recently that the Celtics and the Nets have been in trade talks surrounding Kevin Durant, with the Celtics offering Jaylen Brown, Derek White, and a first round pick for Kevin Durant, and the Nets counter with saying that they want to add Marcus Smart to that deal as well as another pick. So Hunter, do you think that the Celtics should make a move for Kevin Durant? And if so, what do you think is the most that they should give?
As a Laker fan, I love seeing this whole situation play out, because I feel like both sides are valid. Because if you look at the camp that says, we want to keep the core we have and like just see where it goes from here. I mean, you're very young. You have room to improve. And obviously you got off to a bumpy start last year and then went on one of the craziest tears in NBA history after maybe it was 20, 30 games into the season. So I understand why a lot of people want to keep the team as it is together. And then there's other people who say, well, just adding Kevin Durant to Jason Tatum, that would be the best duo in the game, possibly. Like, there's a lot of people who do say that. So it's a tough decision. But personally, I'm of the opinion that the Nets and the Celtics are not going to find an agreement, and that the Celtics should stay where they're at. Personally, I think it's just too much to give up. And if they end up giving all these pieces away, if they add Kevin Durant, their team is going to be very, very, very forward and center heavy, between Grant Williams, Robert Williams, Danilo Gallinari, Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, Al Horford. All of your best players are all bigs. I mean, you still do have Malcolm Brogdon, but that's not enough to make up for that. And also, Malcolm Brogdon is a player with an injury history, and he hasn't played a full season since 2018, 2019. So it's been a long time for him. So asking that much of him wouldn't be a great idea. And that's assuming that you give up Marcus Smart.
Yeah, I think that, you know, this deal hinging on Marcus Smart is really the breaking point for the Celtics, because yes, giving up Jaylen Brown would hurt, and also Derek White, who is a key rotational piece for them and played really well for them in the playoffs. But, you know, if you're getting Kevin Durant back, that's pretty much negligible. Like, you can take that. But if you're giving up Smart, he's really the soul of this team. He is the locker room guy who's always firing up his teammates. He helped set the defensive identity that made the Celtics, you know, the best defense in the league. And so if you're getting rid of him, as well as Jaylen Brown and Derek White, you basically have to start from scratch on how this team is going to play, what they're going to play like, and, you know, how they should operate moving forward. And yes, you're going to get Kevin Durant, but as we saw last year and during this whole run in Brooklyn, just getting Kevin Durant is not enough. You know, like, you actually need to have a scheme. You need to have the right pieces around him. And Kevin Durant, I guess, is not as valuable as you might think. And so, if I'm the Celtics, is it like, I just made the Celtics and I was competitive with the Warriors, so why would we blow it all up and take a huge gamble on a guy who for the past 2 years, it just hasn't panned out for? And you already made a great move by adding Malcolm Brogdon for essentially nothing. So you did get better. It's not like you didn't do anything this offseason. So I wouldn't make this move. I think it's right to inquire about it, but to make this move would be a big mistake in my opinion.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. But I can understand the people who say that KD is going to add a lot of value to this team. Obviously, you get more talented, but that doesn't make your team necessarily better, because you're going to have a ton of identity issues, because this team has such a defined identity in how they want to play. They're very talented, but strong and big. And Kevin Durant takes away your strong, and it takes away your defensive identity, especially if you're getting rid of Marcus Smart. So I think that would create a lot of burden on Robert Williams, like as far as the defensive side of the ball. And then what is your lineup going to look like, assuming you have to give up all these pieces, including Marcus Smart, Malcolm Brogdon? Are you starting Jason Tatum at the two and then playing Gallinari, KD, and Robert Williams? Or are you starting Al Horford?
Gallinari would not
Okay,
start.
well, is Al Horford starting? Are you starting KD at the three and Jason Tatum at the two? Like,
You
I don't know how I feel
could
about that.
squeeze in like Peyton Pritchard or something. Like, I don't know. They would make it work. But for me, I agree. I think this would just really mess up their identity a lot. And also, you have to look at the ages here. Jason Tatum is 24, Jaylen Brown is 25. They're on the same timeline. Kevin Durant is 33, right? So he's only going to sort of regress as he gets older, and maybe not regress in the traditional sense where he gets worse skill-wise, because I think Kevin Durant is just such a generational talent that I don't think that's really going to happen. But he's just going to get injured more and more
Bro,
frequently.
I think it's the way LeBron regresses in the sense that LeBron, like, I think Kevin Durant is going to hold up over a long period of time. I just think he's going to put less and less effort on the defensive end of the ball.
Exactly. And if you're a team built on defense, that is not what you want. Jaylen Brown is 25. You know, you can have him for a long time, and you can really just build around Tatum and Brown for the foreseeable future. So for like to gamble that heavily is not a bet I would take.
Also, people are underestimating the value of having players stick together for a long period of time. I mean, like, the best teams, like, obviously, the Celtics were a team that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum had been playing together for, what, 4 or 5 plus, maybe about that long, 4 or 5 years. And the other team that got there was the Warriors, who had been playing together for 10 plus years in the main core. So, I mean, it really does matter to have that longevity in your
And
core.
look at the team that won prior, the Bucks. How long had Chris Middleton and Giannis been a duo?
Exactly. And they added Jrue Holiday, but it's the duo or the trio of players that's really there from the beginning that helps you win.
Exactly, because they have the chemistry, they know how to play with each other. And when the going gets tough, you know, they can put trust in each other, and that's built up over a long time. And those are the things that like don't show up on the stat sheet that you can't really account for when you're making these trades, but they're invaluable to a championship team.
Yeah, and people also talk about like Kyrie Irving's like sense of you don't know what he's thinking, but I feel like Kevin Durant is just as much as Kyrie Irving in that same boat because he's constantly switching where he wants to be.
Exactly. Like Kevin Durant is at this point in his career, I wouldn't say he's as much of a gamble as Kyrie, but he's definitely not a guarantee anymore. Like if 4 years ago, if you got Kevin Durant, you're like, okay, we're making it to the championship. We're probably going to win. But Kevin Durant now, he's just so mercurial. He just switches up so much that I just wouldn't take that risk if I were a team as well structured as the Celtics.
Moving on to a former teammate of Kevin Durant's, let's talk about James Harden. He's now officially signed with the 76ers on a 2-year, $68.6 million contract. So this wasn't the max. He did take a bit of a pay cut. But do you think this is worth it? Is this a consensus good move?
Yeah, I think this is a very good move. If you're the Sixers, obviously, if you get a more team-friendly deal for one of your stars, that's a great deal. And James Harden, props to him for taking a pay cut so that his team could get more players, to build a more winning roster. And we saw that throughout the offseason, adding a guy like PJ Tucker is really going to help the Sixers with some shooting, with some defense. And so props to James Harden for this. I think this is something we see throughout sports, superstars who want to win taking pay cuts. Like this is something famously Tom Brady did so that his roster could get, more talent. And so for James Harden to, really literally put his money where his mouth is shows that he cares about winning. And so I'm glad to see that. It would have been so easy for him to just take the max and just be like, well, that's what we do in this league, where we take the money. But Harden clearly seems to care about winning, and hopefully we see that translate to his on-court play next year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said. I don't think there's much more to add to that.
Yeah.
So we can move on to the next topic. Another deal with money, like, is it worth it? Is people talking about Draymond Green? He's looking for the max, or he's looking for the most money he can make. He wants a 4-year, $138.4 million contract. Do you think he's worth that, especially on a team where you're going to have to pay so many guys in the future, like Jordan Poole.
See, that's hard because on one hand, Draymond Green is arguably the most valuable player on this team. Obviously, you know, you can't discount Steph and like what he does on offense, but Green is the centerpiece of the defense. He handles a lot of the playmaking, a lot of setting up that offense and getting Steph in a position to thrive. And he's really the heart and soul of this team. He's the guy firing them up in the locker room. He's the guy, you know, yelling on the court. And so his value is really transcends money. Like he is as much of the Warriors as Steph is. But you also have to look at it this way. How old is Draymond Green right now? Is he 33?
32 or 33.
32, 33, doesn't matter. In 4 years, you know, you're going to have Draymond Green at 36, 35. And we've already seen Draymond Green, he's not the offensive player that he used to be. In 2016, Draymond Green was at least a decent three-point shooter. You know, you could trust him to handle the ball on offense and to, like, go for drives and to actually create his own offense. But as we saw in the finals last year and throughout most of the playoffs, his offense has really fallen off a cliff in recent years. And so, you know, you're not getting that much offensive firepower from any anymore, but his defense is still there. And so is a player like that worth the max for 4 years? Are you willing to pay a 36-year-old Draymond Green like $40 million? That's the rule. That's what this comes down to. And I don't know if I could really give a definitive answer on that right now. What do you think? I'm just curious where your head's at.
I'm a guess to this because you have Steph Curry and you have Klay Thompson, whereas Klay Thompson very, very obviously isn't who he was. We'll see what happens this year. But you just won a championship and you have a chance to go again at another one. Maybe you lost a little depth, but that's going to be made up for by the improvement in your young guys, including James Wiseman, who's coming back, who didn't play at all last year, Moses Moody, Jonathan Kuminga, and Jordan Poole's going to take another step up too. So if you didn't get worse, you probably got better on this Warriors team simply just because you have so much young talent that's just getting better. So you have a great shot at winning back-to-back. Why are you going to throw that out and not give Draymond Green his money just because you don't want to pay him when he's 37? And yes, that's definitely a concern. But at the same time, you need to focus on the now while Steph Curry is who he is, or Steph Curry is who he is. You know what I mean? Like, Steph can probably play like this for a long time, but it's not going to get any better. Like, you don't have any better odds than you do right now.
But the thing is, you listed a number of key young players that are on this Warriors team that any of them could really emerge and be like have a breakout year and become like that next star player for the Warriors. Like, what if next year Jonathan Kuminga takes that step up and he looks great? He looks like a promising two-way guy, super athletic, like the guy that we thought he would be coming into the draft as he gets a bigger role and more minutes on the team. Or James Wiseman, like, looks like the number two overall pick. What do you do then? Because you don't have money to pay all of these guys. So clearly, some people are going to have to go. And somebody in the big three between Steph, Clay, and Draymond is going to have to go. And you would say that you would pick Draymond over Clay?
I would pick Draymond over Clay. That sounds bad. Mm-hmm. I would hate to do that to Clay. But I would argue that Clay was worse than Draymond for the entirety of that Celtics series. I don't have the stats in front of me, but just the eye test and what I remember tells me that for the most part. Draymond, you cannot replace. Clay Thompson, as is last year, is a replaceable player.
But the issue is that you're already paying Clay Thompson through, like, or until 2024, and he's going to be making like $43 million in that year. So
yeah,
that's the really the big issue. Like, you don't have a lot of flexibility here for the Warriors. And so Draymond Green is really the piece that, like, you do have some control over.
If I were the Warriors, I would try to give him maybe a 3+1 or a 2+1 as opposed to the full 4-year deal. But agreed.
I think if you're the Warriors, you have to play this smart. And I trust the Warriors front office. They're one of the best, most well-run front office. Bob Myers does a great job with that team. So I expect them to make the right move here, but I would be very careful.
I also don't know what other team in the league can utilize Draymond like the Warriors do. So I don't know what his value is across the league, even if he were to try and walk. I don't think.
I think he has a very high value across the league. I think any team would give him a lot of money.
You
Any team.
really do think so? Because I think his value is highest on the Warriors.
But we don't know that because we've never seen him on any other team. But Draymond is the type of player that can adapt his game and make himself valuable on any championship contending team. If you're a team that's like on the brink and you add him, oh my, you're getting so much better. Like,
That's true.
can you imagine the Grizzlies with Draymond?
Oh, that would be great.
Insane. And they would immediately be like championship favorites, in my opinion. But moving on, unless you have anything more to add.
No. It's just a tough situation. That's it.
Yeah, it's a tough situation, but this happens to any sort of dynasty. You got to pay everybody, but money is limited. Moving on, this I thought was interesting. I don't know if there's really too much to talk about here, but in Zion's new contract, because we knew he signed that extension, that max extension with the Pelicans, there is a weight clause in here, which basically means that the sum of his body weight and body fat percentage must be under 295. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that I think that's what people have been talking about. Like they need to impose something like that on him. I honestly think 295 is kind of high for somebody his size. I mean, he came into the league maybe about 280. And I think from where he started in the league, he needed to lose weight, not gain weight. So
Right, but the
I've
thing is that his body fat percentage, that's really the big thing because it's the sum of the two, right? Say
Yeah.
it's like,
Oh, the sum of the two, I see.
yeah,
Yes.
so this is honestly like going to be pretty tough to keep, because like you can't maintain realistically, like if you're Zion, a guy like that can't maintain like a 10% body fat. So either he's going to have to lose a lot of weight or literally get on like a crazy diet and routine where he can maintain a very, very low body fat percentage.
But the thing about that is, I feel like Zion should have been doing that from the get-go, so the Pelicans are now just forcing him to do that.
Yeah, no, I think this is definitely good, like from the Pelicans, that they are imposing some sort of weight restrictions. But whether this is too restrictive is yet to be seen. But I'm excited to see Zion next year. Like he was one of the most entertaining players in the league. And one thing about Zion is he's just so different, like nobody else in the NBA plays like Zion. He really has his own game, and that just makes him endlessly entertaining to watch.
Yeah, the Pelicans are definitely gonna be a fun team to watch. I'm excited to watch them. Moving on, I think let's talk about top five moves that were under the radar this season. So I want to know which one of these moves is your favorite, and we can get into like the details, but let me just list them off. So we have Gallinari to the Celtics, Otto Porter Jr. to the Raptors, KCP to the Nuggets, TJ Warren to the Nets, and DeAnthony Melton to the Sixers.
I think the name that jumps out here is going to be KCP to the Nuggets. That's the move that I like the most because KCP is a guy who he's basically your typical 3-and-D guy, but he's had a lot of big moments in the playoffs. He's a very reliable guy, I would say. He has some cold streaks like any shooter, but they never get too bad to the point where it's like, Danny Green cold streaks and he misses everything. And in my opinion, KCP is a very underrated defender. Especially for an on-ball guy, you could throw him on pretty much any guy in the league and he'll at least, hold his own weight. And so I think KCP is going to fit very well in this Nuggets team alongside Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr., and Nikola Jokic. And I think he's going to help elevate them a lot. And I expect a lot out of the Nuggets with those two key guys in Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. coming back, being healthy. And I think that, this move is just sort of the cherry on top for this Nuggets team.
Yeah, I mean, if Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray come back and they are who they were, this is a serious contender, especially with the way Jokic has been.
Exactly. All Jokic has needed has been some help, and he's finally getting some reinforcements.
Yeah. KCP was my pick, but I can talk about another guy that I also
Oh,
really
yeah.
like.
Sorry, my bad. I stole your pick.
But I really like DeAnthony Melton. On the Sixers. He was a Grizzly last year, and he was one of those key pieces when Ja Morant was out and keeping this team a very winning team. He's like a super quick defensive-minded smart guy. and he's really productive off of the bench, which I feel is really going to add to the Sixers. He's really young. He's 24 years old, shooting 38% from deep and averaged 11 points when John Morant was out. So I think this is really just going to help them on their guard depth, especially having a guy like James Harden who might get winded quickly in the offseason. Like coming out of the gate, he's not always the most in shape, and he is getting older. So having a young athletic player like D'Anthony Melton could really help.
Yeah, I really like D'Anthony Melton. I think, you know, he's going to do good things with the Sixers. I like the fit a lot. As you said, he's really going to just elevate their game as a good backup point guard. Also want to mention he's an LA guy. He was born right here in North Hollywood, went to USC. So shout out to D'Anthony Melton.
Get him on the pod.
I'll just leverage my connections, you know. I know all the LA NBA players. But moving on.
Next week we're actually having LeBron on. Just a spoiler.
LeBron on from the Drew League to the Talent Talk pod, just doing all the big LA things, you know. But moving on. This is like an interesting thing I saw on Twitter. It's just one of those start bench cut things where it's like you start one of the players, you bench one of them, and you cut one of them from your roster. And so the three players here are Tyrese Maxey, Jordan Poole, and Tyler Hero. Three very, very talented young players.
Yeah, they're very different. They're all very, very different in the way they play as well. But I'm going to start Tyrese Maxey, bench Jordan Poole, cut Tyler Hero.
So just the same order that's written in.
Yeah. Actually, the same order that's written, but I think break that down.
Why are you starting?
I'll start with Tyrese Maxey. Is when James Harden was not really playing great. In between James Harden and Ben Simmons, when it was just Joel Embiid on that team, Tyrese Maxey was the guy who stepped up, and he stepped up massively. He was great offensively, defensively. He is a complete player. He's very young and he's a lot of room to grow. And I think he's just had to take on a bigger role than Jordan Poole and Tyler Hero had in the past. And I just think that he's stepped up to the plate. He hasn't fallen short when he's been asked to do great things. And he is a like walking bucket. Like he can give you 40 points on any night, and he's done it in the postseason too. So I know he's like a legit guy. Moving on to Jordan Poole. I think Jordan Poole, I give him that based on – are we talking just now or potential as well?
Just all of them. Like, you get these three.
Okay. Players, yeah. Like... So, I think Tyrese is still my number one. But with Jordan Poole, that potential is there. I mean, we saw what he did. He tore up the conference finals this postseason and really stepped up when Steph had to come off the bench to start this postseason. Tyler Hero, I really like him, but he just does – provides nothing defensively, and if his shot isn't falling, he's pretty much entirely useless. And I feel Jordan Poole can provide some other aspects to his game. If he's not scoring, I think Jordan Poole is a better cutter than he is. I think he is a little bit craftier around the rim than Tyler Hero. Although I really do like Tyler Hero, I think he is more limited in his motion in the game than these other two guys.
I agree. And I think, you know, you want to talk about postseason performances. I think that Jordan Poole is the guy at number one here because he helped his team win a championship. He had some big moments in the finals too. Like he clearly has the highest amount of playoff, I guess, credentials there. But Tyler Hero would be number two there because of the run in the bubble in 2020. And, you know, the Miami Heat have made the playoffs pretty much every postseason that he's been in the league. But I would agree with your list. I think that I'm going to put Tyrese Maxey one. Poole, I'm going to bench him and then cut Tyler Hero. I'm cutting Hero despite the fact that I said he had a lot of playoff credentials because I've just seen too many stinkers from him. I've seen too many games where he shoots just abysmally from the field. And I haven't seen enough from him in the postseason where, you know, he's contributing to winning. He's not being like terrible on defense. And he did win Sixth Man of the Year, and that's impressive. But for a guy, if I wanted to win some basketball games, I'm going to take either Tyrese Maxey or Jordan Poole.
And also, if you look at the Sixth Man of the Year, that often tends to go to guys who are just elite scorers off the bench, and that's what they do. Like Jordan Clarkson's another good example of that.
Yeah, Lou Williams, like Jamal Crawford.
These aren't guys who are coming into the game to provide defensive help. These are guys who are coming in to get buckets while your starters aren't playing, and you need a little bit more flow to your game while your other guys have get some rest.
Yeah, now that you say that, I have no idea why you ever made that pick for Sixth Man of the Year. The prediction for
Thaddeus Young.
Yeah, he does not fit that archetype at all. Like, not even.
No. But he's just an exception, like Domantas Sabonis.
Oh, okay, I gotcha. But yeah. I'll just say one last thing about Tyrese Maxey. I think that, you know, I was very impressed with him throughout this season. I think that the Sixers were so smart to make him pretty much untouchable in any sort of trade discussions. And Maxey, just like, there doesn't seem to be a weakness in his game. He's a terrific finisher. He has a great three ball. He can really do it all on offense. And then on defense, he's good and he has room to improve, which is great. And I think that he will improve. And I could foresee him being like a future all-star, if not a superstar. Like, he has that potential. All the pieces are there. And he's in the right environment to do so as well. Jordan Poole, I think he also has that potential, but he's a much more streaky player than Tyrese Maxey. There are games where he's just ice cold and can't do anything.
Yeah, I agree. I think Tyrese Maxey can provide the most at any given time on the court. But moving on to some like fun trade ideas, let's talk about the Knicks and Donovan Mitchell. We talked about that a little bit in the last episode, but this is a Bleacher Report trade idea, and I just want to get your opinions on it. So. The Knicks are going to get Donovan Mitchell in this trade, and the Jazz are going to get Evan Fournier, Quentin Grimes, Cam Reddish, and 4 first-round picks.
So if you're the Jazz, if you're making this deal, you're rebuilding. So Evan Fournier is really just there for money purposes. He's not going to provide anything whatsoever because you're not trying to win. Quentin Grimes and Cam Reddish are really the players here that you want. And yes, I like Quentin Grimes. I think he's a great three-point shooter and he has a lot of potential. But is he really like part of the centerpiece deal for a guy like Donovan Mitchell? No. And Cam Reddish, yes. He's had a lot of potential and I still think he can be a good player in this league. But at this point, I think he's kind of a known quantity. At this point, I don't think he is really going to like explode and become like a superstar player like a lot of people thought. And then you're getting 4 first round picks, but on a team like the Knicks with Donovan Mitchell, like those are going to be high first round picks. So if I'm the Jazz, this is not a good deal for me. For a guy like Donovan Mitchell, especially considering what you got for Rudy Gobert, this feels like you're selling him way short. And I think you need to include a guy like Mitchell Robinson, Obi Toppin, if not RJ Barrett. Like, you need to get one of those big guys in a deal for Donovan Mitchell if you're going to make that deal.
That's interesting that you say that, because if I am the Knicks, I'm not willing to give up 4 first-rounders. I'm only going to give up 3 at most. 2029 is a good bit away, and you don't know what your franchise is going to look like at that point. I am not willing to give up that many picks. You see what Kevin Durant's trade value is, and not even Kevin Durant is going for 4 first-round picks. He's going for a guy in Jaylen Brown. He's probably worth 2 first-round picks. And another – maybe Kevin Durant's going for 3 first-round picks and a player, like in value, let's say, and a good player. As of right now, look, KD, what the Celtics offered was Jaylen Brown, Derek White, and a first.
And they denied that deal. They didn't accept it.
I understand that. But they counter with adding Smart and another pick, right? Because, so let's meet in the middle of those two. Let's say they met in the middle and say it was adding another pick without Smart. So you get 2 picks, Derek White and Jaylen Brown. Okay, that's maybe
Derek White is worth a first in himself. That's what the Celtics got
for. Let's say it's worth five picks in value. 5 picks total.
Way more than that, dude. Rudy Gobert was 5 picks in value. KD is way more than 5 picks, bro. He's at least like 7. Like, in terms of just like, if you want to make every player worth picks, like, he's worth like 7 plus.
Again, I think this market's super inflated because of how high that Rudy Gobert trade went for, and I don't think that's a realistic target for general trades around the NBA.
Well, this market, just like the real market right now.
No, but I just don't think that's realistic for this to be sustainable for the NBA. So I think even if you are the Knicks and you say, we look at all these 4 picks, I mean, maybe next year is a better option for you.
Okay, like even look at a trade like you know, the Nets getting James Harden from Houston. How many picks were in that deal? Like I think it was 3 first round picks and 4 first round pick swaps. And you know, like that was like selling him relatively short. Like I think that, you know, everyone sort of agreed like Houston could have got a lot more in that deal. And so for a guy like Kevin Durant, I still think, and for a guy like Donovan Mitchell, who's still young, who has superstar potential and like plays like a superstar occasionally, I think that you can get more for him.
Yeah, well, we'll see where that one ends up. Moving on to the next one. This is another interesting one. The Lakers are going to get Mike Conley and Bojan Bogdanovic, and the Jazz get Russell Westbrook and a 2027 first-round pick and 2 seconds.
Honestly, this is not the worst deal I've ever heard in my life. And I'm not just saying that because the Lakers get rid of Russell Westbrook and get 2 decent rotational guys, because I think this deal is good for the Lakers. You get rid of Westbrook, which is honestly, in my opinion, a negative asset. And you're getting Mike Conley and Bojan Bogdanovic, who are 2 solid veteran role players who contribute to winning basketball. You know, they've been around and you can incorporate them into your system relatively easily. And I think they would fit alongside LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And for the Jazz, you're going to get rid of a ton of salary by getting rid of Conley and Bogdanovic. And Westbrook's deal is going to expire in 1 year, so that money's going to be off your books. You get a first-round pick, which can't hurt, and then 2 seconds. So if you're doing this deal, I would imagine it would be part of a larger you know, part by the Jazz to sort of blow it all up, you know, send Mitchell somewhere else and just like retool for the future. But honestly, I've seen worse trades, and I think this is one that could very well happen.
Yeah. Both, this is a win-win. I feel like this isn't probably the best deal the Lakers could get for Russell Westbrook, but let's say everything else falls through, this is definitely like not a bad deal.
Yeah, honestly, if for like for the Lakers, if they were able to get like Mike Conley and Bogdanovic, who are 2 good NBA players, in my opinion, we've seen good things from them in the regular season, in the postseason.
Mike Conley did great things against the Dallas Mavericks.
Look, I never said they were great all the time. All right, every player has their sticker moments, but regardless, I think that, you know, like for them to get positive assets in return for Westbrook, who had the worst year of his career and was terrible, like I think would be incredible. But we can move on from that good trade idea to, in my opinion, a terrible trade idea. It's the Timberwolves getting Kyrie Irving and the Nets having a reunion with D'Angelo Russell.
That's just not even. Not at all even.
Explain.
I mean, the Timberwolves would be gaining Kyrie Irving, which is incredible. And the Nets wouldn't be getting that much return. I feel like D'Angelo Russell has been underwhelming in Minnesota. And while Kyrie Irving does have his issues, that's just too lopsided for me. I think Kyrie Irving has more value than that.
Agreed.
And not only that, but I feel like that's kind of like D'Angelo Russell isn't going to get you to where you want to be. If you're the Nets organization, you either have to blow it up entirely or you have to like be wanting to win a ring. And getting D'Angelo Russell, and let's say you keep Ben Simmons and make a core around that, is not going to get you a ring. That's going to keep you in the middle of the pack. That's going to keep you in the middle of the pack at best.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be getting good picks, and you're not going to be like winning enough playoff basketball to matter.
You don't think a big three of D'Angelo Russell, TJ Warren, and Ben Simmons is contender right there?
You know, possibly. We'd have to see. If maybe Ben Simmons will just be like, screw it, I really don't care anymore, and start shooting threes.
No, honestly, look, if we got 2019 D'Angelo Russell, bubble TJ Warren, and summer league Ben Simmons, that's a championship contender.
I would honestly be like, that is a championship contender.
Easily, because you got basically the next LeBron in TJ Warren. You have, you know, an all-star point guard in D'Angelo Russell, and then you have
an all-star defender and
guy who actually has a shot. He is a yeah. with Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I agree. I think this is pretty asymmetrical. I think that
let's talk about the Timberwolves with Kyrie Irving for a second. Rudy Gobert, Kat, Kyrie Irving, Anthony Edwards.
God, that's a nice roster.
That could be top three in the West.
It very well could be. And I think that, you know, like, you would have to sort out that, like, key wing position, because I think, you know, you're very heavy on the guards here, and you would be a little undersized at that wing position. So I don't think they would match up well with a team that has a very strong wing presence. Like, I think, like, the Warriors would be good.
Anthony Edwards is going to have to step up. He's going to be the guy.
How tall is Anthony Edwards? I'm pretty sure
he's 6'8".
No way. There's no way he's that tall.
Maybe he's shorter than that. He's
4". Let's see. Yeah, you see, he's 6'4".
For some reason, I thought he was taller than that.
See, so he would be probably playing the 2 in this situation. Kyrie at the 1, and then obviously Kat and Gobert at the 4 and 5. So you would have to sort out, like, who's going to be that guy manning down the 3, and just, like, really anchoring it down.
Who is it going to be? Like, Jaden McDaniels?
Honestly, I'm not mad at that. Jaden McDaniels is a solid defender. So if you just ask him.
Yeah, and he's 6'9", so he could definitely handle it.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously from the Timberwolves, I'm accepting this deal in a heartbeat, but that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, no chance.
Another Nets deal. This one is strange, to say the least. This is between the Brooklyn Nets and the Dallas Mavericks, and it revolves around Ben Simmons. So the Dallas Mavericks would receive Ben Simmons, and in exchange, the Brooklyn Nets would take reunite with Spencer Dinwiddie this time. They would get Maxi Kleber, a 2025 first-round pick, lottery-protected, and a 2027 first-round pick, lottery-protected.
Why would you ever do this if you are the Mavs? You just got a great postseason out of Spencer Dinwiddie, and Maxi Kleber was honestly what was able to get you over the hump against the they played the Utah Jazz and then they played the Suns. I think Maxi Kleber was what got them over the Suns. Like, legitimately, I think that was the difference maker. Why would you ever give that up for a guy you have no clue what he's going to look like and if he's even willing to play? Like, that just doesn't make any sense. I don't know how, like, familiar you are with, like, the schemes in the series between the Suns and the Mavs, but Maxi Kleber was the key to that because he kept DeAndre Ayton away from the paint, and they were kind of playing this game of cat and mouse where Maxi Kleber was out at the three-point line and DeAndre Ayton would have to come out and open up the paint, and if he didn't close out on him, then he'd be making his shots. I'm pretty sure he went like 60% from corner threes or something in that series. And that's how they won. And if you can keep something like that going, if you're the Mavs, and you add to that by getting a guy like Christian Wood, why would you ever decide, you know what, Ben Simmons is the right move for us? Because Ben Simmons is somebody who's ball dominant. If you're not going to have him shooting, he needs to be at least running the point guard, which Luka is going to do.
Okay, let me make the case. Let me make the case for him, okay? First of all, the Mavericks need a secondary ball handler after losing Jalen Brunson. Right now, they don't have one. Like, they've literally – I mean, yeah, they have Spencer Dinwiddie, but, like, he's not really that guy, like, to fill up that void.
I mean, he wasn't Brooklyn, though. He could be.
He is not. He's just not that guy anymore. Like, we have to just come to terms with that. He's decent.
He's still not – he's still young enough to do – to do that. I feel like he's 28, maybe. He's not old.
He's 29. He's gonna be turning 30. He's not gonna be. Oh, he's also from Los Angeles, right here, Woodland Hills.
He went to Taft.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about that. But anyway, regardless, I think that, you know, think about this trio, right? Ben Simmons, Luka, and Christian Wood. That's the best big three Luka Doncic has ever played with. That's a supersized lineup, and that could cause some real matchup nightmares for opposing teams. And I think Ben Simmons would really help the defense of this team. And if you're somehow able to figure out Ben Simmons off ball, like make him a screener, make him a cutter, alongside Luka Doncic, that could really help elevate his game and take his game to places that it's never been to before. And it honestly... Because if you're the Mavericks, right, do you think that you have the pieces to contend again? Like, do you think that after losing Brunson, like, you still are going to be a contender? Or do you think you have to swing for the fences and try and make a bold move like this? That's really what this deal comes down to, in my opinion.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, they did already make a bold move with Kristaps in that trade.
Exactly. And no. Everyone was scratching their heads at that one. But it ended up working out. So...
But I think this one's a little bit more of a head scratcher, because the thing with Kristaps is, like, the other guys were, you knew they were going to play. You don't know that Ben Simmons is going to play.
That is true, but it's a gamble. It's a risk. And honestly, the upside is very high. And if, like, if
but the downside is you just gave away Spencer Dinwiddie, Maxi Kleba, and two picks for nothing.
That is true. So, I mean, it's a risk. Like, it's a gamble. But I guess we would have to wait and see what would happen with that. So, I guess the last trade that I found from the Bleacher Report is one that involves the Toronto Raptors and the Indiana Pacers, centered around Miles Turner. So in this deal, the Raptors would get Miles Turner, and the Pacers would receive Precious Achiuwa, Kem Birch, Malachi Flynn, Svi Mykhailiuk, and a 2023 first-round pick, top five protected.
I actually do like this trade for both teams. I don't know how you feel about it, but I think if you're Indiana, maybe you could. I think that's – you couldn't really get much more. Precious Achiuwa is a solid player. He's – you're getting Kem Birch, Malachi Flynn, Svi Mykhailiuk. Those guys don't really matter. But you are getting a 2023 first-round pick. And the top five protected doesn't really matter, because the Raptors are good enough to where you know they're not going to be a lottery team. And adding Miles Turner to that very young core in the Raptors would be really good. Imagine him next to Scottie Barnes. Like, that is a perfect complement.
Think of this super-sized lineup that that the Raptors could run out with OG Anunoby, Scottie Barnes, Pascal Siakam, and Miles Turner. That's a lineup that's like 6'7 to 6'11 pretty much. And like in the article, they kept talking about how this would be a deal that the Raptors would do as like a precursor to a Kevin Durant deal to make the Raptors a more appealing destination. So imagine adding Kevin Durant to that, because the Raptors would still have plenty of pieces. They have a lot of picks.
I don't know that the Raptors should make that many moves to like get a aging star. I think they're more in a position to grow as a young core like the Cavs.
But still, like, you know, like obviously if you can get Kevin Durant as the Raptors, I think they make that move any day of the week. Because like if they can, obviously they would want to hold on to Scottie Barnes, but still they could trade Gary Trent Jr. and Anobi, Siakam, Scottie Barnes. Like,
I would trade Siakam in a heartbeat.
Yeah, exactly. You add Kevin Durant to that mix, like Toronto instantly becomes a contender in the East again.
Yeah. And do you think that KD could do what Kawhi did?
I think so. I think that the Raptors under Nick Nurse, like, they have the pieces, they have the system. And it would all depend on what Kevin Durant would look like and how he would mesh with them. But I think that he has the talent to do so. And I think that that would be a very interesting team to watch.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that Kawhi Leonard is a different animal. When you're comparing it to Kevin Durant, when it comes to both sides of the ball, I think a healthy Kawhi Leonard is different than Kevin Durant at this point in his career. I don't think Kevin Durant could do the same thing, especially by himself, like as the lone superstar.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's the thing with Toronto. They have so many guys around him that could be able to contribute. Like in this deal, Miles Turner would still be there. I'm sure some of, you know, OG Anunoby, Gary Trent Jr. Chris Boucher. There would still be some talent left around him. And Nick Nurse knows how to get the most out of these talented players. And so I don't think it would just be Kevin Durant by himself. And I think, like, even if we look at that Kawhi Leonard run, it wasn't just Kawhi Leonard single.
No, it was Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol, Kyle Lowry,
yeah, like
Fred VanVleet. But I also think that team is better.
Okay, yeah, true. But I think that the Raptors, you know, I just think that they would be in a good situation to contend.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're not going to contend. I just don't think they win with that team. And I think that you maybe could win in 3-4 years down the line if you're looking at a consolidated young core. Look at yourself as the Celtics in the same way they did and say, we want to have guys mesh with each other, same timeline, and build a bond strong enough to overcome other teams that don't have the same bond. And really develop an identity, especially with a coach like Nick Nurse, who's very, very like schematically inclined, and he's very smart. I think that would be a better decision.
Yeah, I mean, all this is hypothetical, so I guess Well, not really, no, but hopefully a move gets made with Kevin Durant soon. I'm tired of talking about hypotheticals.
Oh, my God. Hypotheticals with the whole Lakers and Russell the Westbrook. Nets and – oh, it's horrible. Hypotheticals suck. I read one more
rumor about, like, the Lakers are interested in X player. Okay, then get him. Stop being interested. Go get him. Like, I don't care that you're interested in Buddy Hield. Make a move to get Buddy Hield. Like, what are you doing?
The NBA is the most dramatic league in the world.
And on that note, I think that's a good place to wrap up this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back next week or maybe in 2 weeks if nothing happens. But we're pushing through the offseason. The NBA season will be back before we know it.
It's only actually a little over a month away.
Yeah, so it's right around the corner pretty much. We'll keep you posted with any news. Make sure to tune back in. And, yeah. Thank you all again, and take care.
Bye-bye. Peace.